To many fishermen, the invasive Asian carp poses a direct threat to the Great Lakes and to their way of life. To Chef Felipe Parola, the fish is something a little different. Dinner.
You see, from the ugly fish that is invading our water, we come up with a nice little gourmet dish, did we?
As the federal government proposes multi-billion dollar projects to stop the Asian carp's march toward Lake Michigan, research shows that commercial fishing could play a significant role in fighting the spread of the fish, if anyone will buy it. I'm Scott Cameron, protecting the Great Lakes by rebranding Asian carp. That's coming up on Focus after this news. And good morning and welcome to Focus here on WILL. I'm Scott Cameron, sitting in for Jim Meadows today. If you've ever seen Asian carp, you know these are big, ugly fish and they're invasive. Last month, the Army Corps of Engineers proposed a number of options to stop the fish from infesting the Great Lakes in particular. One proposal would permanently separate Lake Michigan from the Chicago River at the cost of nearly $20 billion. Back in 2010, a fisherman working for the state of Illinois caught an Asian carp in Lake Calumet. That's well beyond the electric barrier that had been set up to stop the fish from getting too close to Lake Michigan and entering the Great Lakes. Sean Price is a commercial fisherman based in Fulton, Illinois. He's the one who pulled that fish out of the water, and he joins us now by phone. Sean, welcome to Focus.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Great.
So I'm thinking here, this is 2010. We knew that this was a problem, that Asian carp were moving up towards the Great Lakes. There was already an electric barrier in place there. You're taking part in this effort to watch for Asian carp. Did you ever think you'd find one in Lake Calumet?
No. The thought was that there probably wasn't an Asian carp that existed above the barriers, but our job was to prove that. And I guess what happened was we proved that there was a single fish above the barrier.
Yeah, and you say a single fish. Were there any others that you found since?
No. I mean, so far, no. There's been a tremendous amount of effort put in to locating another one, many different avenues of trying to locate a fish. What we do is the netting. There's also been shocking sampling with different types of nets, hoop nets, all sorts of efforts. Michigan pound nets have been used, seining has been used, and nothing's come up with another fish. And I don't know the exact number, but it's many, many, many miles of net that have been laid in and around Lake Calumet, and no other fish has been located.
All right. So, I mean, the good news in that there aren't other ones who've come through there. And also, I guess you caught the one, huh?
Yeah.
Did you realize, I mean, you mentioned sort of this onslaught of efforts to try to find any more in Lake Calumet or other places nearby. When you pulled that thing out of the water, did you realize the effect it would have creating that kind of a stir?
No, not at all. It was exciting to do it, not knowing the impact that it would have. I'm glad that I was the one, along with my then partner, Ron Brown. I was glad to be the one that that caught the fish. But yes, the after effect was much greater than I anticipated.
Yeah. Describe the fish. I mean, this is a big one.
Yes, it was around 20 pounds, and it was what we call a big head or a black. There's two different kinds of Asian. The silvers are the ones that are the type that jump and fly in the air and that sort of thing, but they're both Asian carp and they're both invasive and they both do a lot of eating. But yeah, it was a 20-pound fish and really caught as far up Lake Calumet as you can go, and we were done sampling for the day. We actually had made, it was actually an extra set. Well, we had a required amount of nets we had to set. We were done with that. We actually strung out a couple extra nets and that's when we got lucky.
Hmm. So it's, and I don't at all mean to make light. I mean, it's a very serious problem posed by Asian carp that many people say, and there's real solutions to try to take care of it. But this, that sounds like a great fish story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a great fish story. It's definitely a needle in a haystack thing if you think about how much effort and how many people and how many organizations have been involved to try to find another fish anywhere above the barriers. And that one fish, you know, almost 4 years ago now, is the only fish still to have been pulled. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. So you talked about, you know, putting out the nets and doing all these efforts to catch them. I mean, usually you go fishing, you think of putting a minnow, a worm on the hook. Asian carp eat plankton. They're not going to bite on that kind of stuff. How do you catch these fish?
We use primarily gill nets, and gill nets consist also of trammel nets. It's just, you know, our nets are 100 to 200 yards long. They're basically tangle nets. They swim in, they get caught, they can't get out, and it's just a effort. You cover as much ground as you can, but you're also, as a fisherman, looking for areas that look, I can say, fishy. They look like areas that would hold fish, and then that's how we catch them. And typically, Asian carp school up. There's a lot, you know, when you find some, there's
whole bunches,
bunches of them. So unless you're dealing with something like that where it is needle in the haystack all the time, and it's just an effort of put as much net in the water as you can and go. I mean, just try to locate it in whatever area you can.
So you, part of your work is working with the DNR to harvest the Asian carp out of waters, identify places where they are, but you're also a commercial fisherman. What have you seen? What have Asian carp done to the fishing industry in the state? What are you hearing from people?
Well, for one, I guess I can't say that Asian carp's necessarily a bad thing in the commercial fishing industry, because it has given more opportunity. I guess presented another species, another fish that we can go after to make money. But the effects on the river have been bad to terrible. When I first started chasing Asian carp, some down in southern Illinois, Festus, Cape Girardeau, that stretch of the river, the fish were, this is probably going back to the late 90s, the fish were still healthy looking, or sort of healthy looking. Now they've done so much to destroy that food chain.
So fish other than Asian carp used to look healthy, and that's not the case anymore?
No, they've shrunk. Their head has shrunk. They don't have the food that they once had. They've ate it out.
Mm-hmm. And have the Asian carp come anywhere near replacing those fish in terms of the people trying to make a living off of these rivers and lakes?
Oh, sure. I mean, if you look at the Illinois River, I would have to think really hard to pick a year for you. But if you go back 20 years, when I was working at a fish market back in high school, the fish coming off the Illinois River were buffalo, catfish, a few carp. Now you hardly ever see a different rough fish. I mean, you see a few hundred pounds in a boat, but now you're talking boatloads of Asian carp and just a few other fish. It has totally reversed the Illinois River from a standard rough fish, carp and buffalo, catfish type, to almost solely Asian carp.
Well, I mean, that's the very definition of an invasive species out there. You mentioned sort of changes over the years and going back through southern Illinois and things. What are those changes that you've seen in the numbers of fish in more recent years? Where are they right now? Where are they going?
I would say that it's easier for the expansion hasn't stopped, and I don't know that it's slowed down. I mean, we're seeing a few more fish in my section of the Mississippi River now than we ever have, more than I have since I've started fishing, but it's not going fast. Now, whether that's the temperature of the water, the dams, I'm not really sure. They've proven they can go through a dam pretty easy, so I don't know if that's the sustaining factor. But the further north that the Asian carp go up a river, the better they do, just because they're moving into new territory with new food and new eating opportunities. But yes, it's changed. Anywhere they have grown in big numbers, it has changed the river, and it doesn't take long. Within a few years, you know, they're eating that food chain down to bare bones.
So, and that cycle continues. They've been slowly moving north, coming to a new area, take over the food supply. The other fish in the area dwindle, vanish to whatever extent, and then they move on and continue their march north until they hit something like some of these barriers that are being built that might stop them or at least slow them down.
Right. And don't sell yourself short. Commercial fishing has definitely slowed the progression down. I mean, we can't fish north of, I believe, the 180 bridge in Illinois, on the Illinois River.
Mm-hmm.
And to fish south of there, the blacks or the big head Asian carp, their numbers are drastically reduced. It's tough to go down there and catch a boatload where it used to be fairly easy. And fishing has done that. The blacks are typically easy to catch, easier to catch. They don't jump over the nets normally, and they do school up. The silvers are so powerful, they'll blow through the net. So will a black, but you can still kind of contain them. Silvers will jump over it, go around it, go through it, and it doesn't stop them.
Okay. This is let's keep heading into that direction. I'm talking about the fishing these, and it's one of the proposals that came up. In fact, let's bring Jim Garvey into the conversation here. He's Interim Vice Chancellor for Research and Professor in the Department of Zoology at Southern Illinois University. He joins us now by phone. Jim, welcome to Focus.
Hey, thank you.
Now, you heard Sean telling the story there and mentioning that commercial fishermen have really been fishing down this population here in Illinois and in other places. You conducted a research project, it was in 2012, that in part was to quantify the Asian carp problem and propose solutions. Among those solutions was exactly that, ramp up commercial production of the fish, in other words, catch it and eat it. Can you talk about that?
Sure. One of the projects that we're involved in is working in the upper Illinois River and assessing the effects of commercial fishing on exactly that issue. Is commercial fishing having an impact on the Asian carp problem up there near Chicago? And so as the fishermen work really hard, and they do, pulling these fish out, what we do is quantify in a lot of different ways the number of Asian carp that are in the various pools and backwaters up in that area. And what we found is that there is an impact. The commercial fishing does reduce these fish. And in fact, the fishermen are so good at doing this that they're able to take the fish out almost as fast as they come in. The problem is it's kind of like a sandbox. I always use an analogy. It's where you dig a hole, and you know, as fast as you can dig that hole and take the fish out, more come back in.
Mm.
And we think that they're coming from the lower river. So, you know, it's the sort of thing where they come in, they start filling up that hole, and then it's very difficult to stop that up without some sort of barrier. You know, they haven't moved all the way up to the barrier area as far as we can tell right now. They, for whatever reason, seem to stop, again, below that 180 bridge. So we're not exactly sure what's keeping them from doing that. That's sort of a big, giant question for us. But they are building up a fairly large population there.
Mm.
And if it wasn't for commercial fishing, yeah, they would be there. Now, the issue with the commercial fishing in the upper river is that it's funded by federal funds that come through the state of Illinois. So they contract the fishermen because commercial fishing is not allowed in that particular part of the river. Whereas it is allowed in the lower portion of the river, below Starved Rock Lock and Dam. And so I've been a proponent that, you know, I believe from the research that we've done that to stop the sand from continuing moving up towards the Chicago area, either, you know, more barriers or more commercial fishing going on down south will probably reduce the propensity for these fish to move upstream and fill up that sandbox hole, I guess.
Yeah. And Sean, does that fit with your experience? Are you seeing that sort of you go into one area, you start to fish, the population moves to another area, and you wind up sort of chasing them up and down the rivers?
Yes. I believe most of that to an extent, except what we call the front line, the upper part of the Asian carp movement, like what we would call established population on a river. And Jim would probably agree that we have basically cut back that front line drastically. I mean, if you look at the upper pool that we pull big numbers of fish out of, that the numbers have dwindled drastically at the upper end of that, the front line of that carp movement. And as you go downriver towards Starved Rock, the number of blacks have been greatly reduced. We still catch the silvers, and we're catching maybe the same number, but it's because we're hitting that area harder and not the upper area as much. But yes, I mean, there's no doubt we've reduced the numbers, and there's no doubt that new fish move into the area given time.
Yeah.
I think at the front line we are a little above, a little better than the fish we catch out. That many more come in. I think we're a little ahead of that at that upper, at the upper end.
And that's the part that people are really worried about, that upper end, keeping these out of the Great Lakes and other things, because once they get there, they're not quite sure. I mean, there's some differing of opinion there, but, you know, I'm curious, too. So it's making a clear difference there. It's helping to stop the, you know, and let me back up for just a quick second. You're talking about different types. When we say Asian carp, you've mentioned a couple different varieties. What do we mean when we say Asian carp, Sean?
When we say Asian carp, we're talking about the whole population, the silvers and the blacks, and there's some crossbreeding going on, and there's really no name for them other than hybrids. But, yeah, there's the silver jumping Asian carp, and then there's what we call either the blacks or the big heads. They're both Asian. They're both invasive. They're both plankton feeders. They're both very aggressive. You know, invasive species.
Yeah. So now, and we've talked about how you're out there, you know, working with the DNR and others, and there's not commercial fishing allowed in many of the areas in these rivers. But as an effort to stop these, you know, they're allowing certain amounts of this. Right now, can a commercial fishing operation make a living off of fishing Asian carp? And I guess, Sean, I'll ask that one to you.
Yes, with a stable market, It is possible, and there are a few guys doing it now who so you can say yes, but we're talking a few guys, a handful, a dozen, 12, 15 guys at best who are truly making a living off of Asian carp. To increase that number, it would have to be a stable market and an ongoing market. So what I mean by that is when the fish are easy to catch, you can't drop the price. And you have to always be able to sell the fish. If you open enough markets or a market that can handle as many fish that come through the doors as fishermen can catch, the opportunities would be greater. It might not last forever because I think fishing would reduce the numbers to where you could no longer make a living. But yes, if the price of fish went up a little bit and you could sell fish 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, absolutely.
Okay, it sounds like the supply is certainly there at the moment, too. If you have questions about Asian carp, if you have direct experience with the fish, give us a call. We're also going to talk here in a few minutes with a chef who has made it really his mission to change people's minds about this fish as we talk about commercial fishing and opportunities to be able to cut into this population to try to prevent it from moving into the Great Lakes and other areas. You can give us a call, 800-222-9455, or drop us an email at will-talk@illinois.edu. We're also on Twitter at Focus580. Jim Garvey, let me come back to you for a minute. Can you tell how big of a threat are Asian carp right now?
I think invasive species in general are a threat to, particularly in aquatic systems. You're talking about zebra mussels and alewife and all these other different species that have caused all kinds of problems in the Great Lakes, as well as in the rivers of the U.S. and the lakes, other lakes. Invasive species are always a really tough problem because they can come in and have dramatically negative potential impacts. The issue with Asian carp is we're talking about these species that they were introduced into the U.S. back in the early 70s. They were brought in for cleaning up wastewater, potentially, in ponds, and also, the potential food fish as well. They escaped, and then they slowly moved their way up through the Mississippi River Basin and then got up into the Illinois River in the late 90s, early 2000s. People still didn't pay much attention to them, even when they were up near Peoria, and then they really started to get close to Chicago. That's sort of when the whole media issues sort of came up because they were getting close to the Great Lakes. The million-dollar question is when they get into the Great Lakes and I hate to say this, and I know that there's lots of talk about keeping them out, but they are going to get into the Great Lakes. They have been occasionally found in the Great Lakes. Another Asian carp called the grass carp and obviously common carp are there already. And I would say that there's likely some big head and maybe even silver carp in the Great Lakes right now. They just aren't in high enough densities that we can detect them or catch them or even see them. And they're probably not keeping a population going. The big question is when they do, if they can make a population sustainable, and if they do, what kind of ecosystem impacts they have. We know that in the Illinois River, they've modified tiny animals called zooplankton. We were just talking about that earlier, that the zooplankton have gotten considerably smaller. And almost every fish in the and insect, larvae, and everything else rely on those tiny animals, those zooplankton, as food. And so when the carp take that away from them, it's going to have a negative impact on other fish. They get into the Great Lakes and do the same thing. They're obviously going to have effects on things like potentially yellow perch, alewife, which are now important, gizzard shad, those sorts of things. So, it's a real threat, and we don't want to let the population get in there and build. But, that's we got to stop it, and commercial fishing is probably the best way to do that.
And you had mentioned before there are barriers and other things. I mean, what else has been tried so far to stop the spread of the Asian carp?
The problem is that we really don't have a silver bullet right now. There's nothing that targets, other than commercial fishing, which does a really good job of targeting big head and silver carp and grass carp and some of the other species that are out there. But there's really no poison that you can use that targets just Asian carp. There have been talked about a Trojan gene. What you do is you introduce a gene into the males in the Asian carp, and then the males only produce males, so eventually you have an all-male population, and then it dies off. The Australians have been playing with this for decades with common carp problem in Australia, and it hasn't worked out very well. Another technology that has been explored is using these things called water guns. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that, but they use high-pressure water and create a big concussion under the water. And what it's technically supposed to do is it takes the swim bladders, the gas bladders, and the fish that they used to be buoyant and makes them explode. It doesn't do a very good job on carp in terms of that because they have very strong swim bladders, so that doesn't help. But the fish don't like it. I mean, it annoys them. And so some of the research we've been doing up near the Chicago area is looking at the efficacy of these water guns. And if you set these compressions out, does it make the carp turn around and go back downriver? And the evidence is yes, it does. And so that's another way of potentially...
And do those have effects on other aquatic life in the area?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, they're going to affect the other fish. And so it won't be just carp that are going to turn around. It'll be walleye and sauger and all those other sorts of species that are not going to like that. But typically, disease would be used as a deterrent around potential conduits by which these fish move. A good spot potentially might be Starved Rock Lock and Dam. The carp seem to pile up down below that dam. And we have some evidence from movement data that it does, at times, keep the fish from moving upstream. They can still get through it, but not very often. And so if we place it like in the locks or in that area, that might be a good place. So it'll have a local effect, but it's not going to have a general effect on the fish population.
Okay, and I know the Army Corps of Engineers not too long ago put out a couple of, I don't think it'll call it a recommendation, but a couple of possible proposals that you could do, many that would involve, billions, tens of billions of dollars, decades to build and do some pretty big feats of engineering. So in many ways, the immediate thing right now is what we're talking about, trying to fish them, if not out of existence completely, then at least to the point where the population is more controllable.
Yeah.
Sean, to come back to you for a minute here, you're... Part of what you do with the Department of Natural Resources here is harvesting the fish. What does that mean, and what do you do when you catch those fish right now?
What we're doing with them is we just go out and fish for the day, and we bring all our fish back to a refrigerated semi-trailer, and we unload them. We take the time to count 30 of each species, the silver, the black. If we do catch grass carp, they're also included in a 30 slot. And we weigh and measure, with the help of the DNR, 30 of each species, and then we unload everything into the semi-trailer. That 30 gives us our weight estimate for the day, the year, however you want to look at it, and our number estimate. They go into the trailer, and they eventually, at the end of the week, or whenever the semi-trailer is full, they go back to Schaefer's Fish Market to be turned into organic fish fertilizer.
Fish fertilizer. So these particular Asian carp are not able to be sold for food?
No. To my knowledge, I think they're still working on that. But as far as I know, they're still just fertilizer.
Okay. And others are. Have you ever eaten one of these?
Yes.
What does it taste like?
Amazingly good. I think if somebody had the foresight years ago to name these fish silver salmon or something to that effect.
Yeah, something more appetizing sounding.
Yes, because I've had both, the silver and the black, and both amazing taste, amazing texture. I'm not a big fish eater, but I'm going to put Asian carp of both species right up with walleye, and I could prove that pretty easy. It's a very white, very flaky meat, very mild. You would look at that fish and think it would taste as fishy as you can get.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening right now going, really, like walleye?
No. Yes, that's I'm being very honest. I mean, I've had it two or three or four different ways, and I haven't had the way that's not good. It's very simple to cook. I've had it as simple as throwing it on the grill with a little bit of butter and seasoning, which is about as plain as you can get, and it was excellent that way. Yeah, the whole carp name has done no favors for the delicacy of the meat.
Yeah,
absolutely right up there in my top two or three fish that I would eat on any given day.
Jim, you agree?
Oh, yeah.
And in many other countries, I mean, it is a delicacy. I mean, it's been nearly fished into out of existence in a number of countries. Well, Sean Price, thank you very much. Sean, a commercial fisherman based in Fulton, Illinois, serves as part of a group of fishermen paid by the state of Illinois to help harvest, keep an eye out, monitor for Asian carp. Sean, I understand you work nights and woke up extra early to be on the show. Thank you very much for doing that and talking to us.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Garvey's interim vice chancellor for research and professor in the Department of Zoology at Southern Illinois University, part of a research team that looked into some options, including fishing and commercial fishing, to cut down on the Asian carp population in the area. Jim, please do stick with us here. We're talking about the problem of Asian carp. The invasive species continues to threaten the Great Lakes. Also talking, as we mentioned, about at least one of the potential solutions, fishing Asian carp, if possible, out of existence in Illinois. Up next, we'll continue that conversation about how this fish tastes, some of the barriers in trying to get people to accept them in different ways. We'll talk with Chef Felipe Parola, talk about his efforts to build a market for Asian carp by convincing other chefs to serve it. Stay with us. It's Focus on WILL. Welcome back to Focus on WILL. I'm Scott Cameron, sitting in for Jim Meadows today. We are talking about the problem of Asian carp, the invasive species that continues to head towards the Great Lakes, some of the efforts that are being done to stop it. With us on the phone, we have Jim Garvey, interim vice chancellor for research and professor in the Department of Zoology at Southern Illinois University. He's been taking a big role in trying to determine not only how many Asian carp are out there in the waterways nearby, where they're doing, what they're up to, how to stop them, including one real solution that's going on right now is commercial fishing. We'll also talk in a moment here with Chef Felipe Parola, who has also been very involved in trying to change perceptions of these fish. Let me go to the phones right now. Ellie is on the line, too. Ellie from Champaign. Ellie, go ahead. You're on Focus. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to point out that most of this information is from an article in the Wall Street Journal on January 29th that actually quotes Chancellor Garvey. They're talking about a number of new plants, one in Wycliffe, Kentucky, that actually has renamed the fish Kentucky Whitefish and are selling them frozen to China. Another one, as mentioned, is in Thompson, Illinois, which ships it frozen to 16 countries and turns it into all sorts of products in the United States. There's another plant that's being opened in Grafton, Illinois, that's going to process 60,000 pounds of carp a day. At least that's what they're able to. And they're going to turn it into fish oil, dietary supplements, et cetera. And then there's more. I mean, they mention a few others. So all of these are coming online, and they say that the market in China is very quite large, and all over Europe. So there seems to be a business spirit to solve this problem. The question is just how fast it's going to take off. I don't see much about selling it here, but that's, I suppose, what the chef's going to talk about.
Well, yeah, exactly. And thank you for that. Thank you for that lead-in. Let me go ahead. Thank you for calling, Ellie. And Chef Felipe Parola is on the line with us. I've been working to change perceptions about Asian carp. He owns Chef Parola Enterprises in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And Chef, welcome to the show.
Yes, welcome. I appreciate the invitation. Jim Garvey, how are you?
I'm great, Chef. How you doing?
Good. I'm good. It's been a long
time. You two know each other? So running in the same circles?
Yeah, we have met a few years back when I was up there doing some cooking and serving some Asian carp product, actually Asian carp silver fan cake.
Yes, and he feeds well. He's a good chef.
Well, just for a minute to go back to Ellie, the caller we just heard from here in Champaign. Chef, he mentioned, you know, it sounds like people are trying to build an industry out of this. You're a part of that effort. Can you talk about that?
Well, yes. The industry of export on the fish is and I think that Mike Schaffer from Schaffer Fishery will tell you, it's a pretty dangerous concept. You can't really control that particular business concept. On the other hand, what I'm going to talk about is what I am doing and the domestic market about this fish. Number one, the whole fish here have very little value in the domestic market. It must be processed. And when I say processed, meaning it need to be turned into value-added product. It need to be sustainable, meaning that the fishermen need to make a good living for them to go out there. Sean was saying a stable market. Of course, with a stable market, everything is good. It's not that easy, so you have to start somewhere. And a stable market, an efficient market, is definitely the key solution to the problem.
Well, just to pause you there for a minute, when you say you can't control the market, it takes a stable market, what does that mean? What would that market look like?
Well, you can control the export market. When you make a shipment out, number one, the economics on that don't really work.
Okay.
The Chinese, I know they love the fish, but they don't pay much money, and that's a fact. And not enough to pay the fishermen to be able to get gear and boat and going out there and spend the money that need to be spent to catch this fish and make a good living. So you have to really understand that the fishermen are the key to this problem, the commercial fishermen, absolutely. And I truly believe to all my travel in so many different states, because let's face it, the Asian carp are from you guys all the way down to the Louisiana, almost the Gulf of Mexico. So this is really an issue that is a nationwide issue. And the fishermen, the commercial fishery here and up north, and I've seen, there are very few out there active. And it's an industry that is diminishing, and you have to somehow have a concept to bring some new blood on board to get this thing going.
Yeah, and you have come to Illinois and to other states. You've met with local chefs to deliver this message that Asian carp is good eating.
You're correct.
How do chefs respond when you come in? I mean, as you've mentioned yourself, this is a big, ugly fish.
Well, no, I never said it's a big, ugly fish.
Oh. There was a video you said it's an ugly, ugly, invasive fish, and yet
no,
here we've turned into a delicious.
Ugly, don't call it ugly fish. It's
oh,
not
I
that
see.
Ugly.
Okay. Okay.
No, I will rephrase that. I never call it ugly.
Okay. No, well, how do people respond when you bring it in and say, here?
Number one, chefs, and I am one of them, I cross many lines now, I'm more involved in food processing industry and food marketing, but I had a restaurant for so many years, and have you ever been to a really busy kitchen in a restaurant?
I have not, no.
Yeah, the chefs are busy. And I brought fish there to many chefs in New Orleans and in travel in many different places. But the answer is always the same. It's too bony and is too difficult to work, too time-consuming. So understanding this, it's very difficult to have the whole fish itself marketable to the chef business or to the restaurant business. And that's a fact. So it will be, and it has been, a little bit of activity where a few chefs in Chicago and different area put that on a dinner special one evening, but the buck stopped there simply because it's too time-consuming to really work with. But on the other hand, as Sean said it, this fish is absolutely incredibly delicious and have some very good health value. So for human consumption, when you look at the fish and you understand that 80% to 85% of what we eat is imported from China or Vietnam, but mainly from China, and the fish that we receive, let's face it, and everybody knows that, it's not that healthy. It's really contaminated with pollutant and excess of preservative. That need to be said. On the other hand, we have a fish here that is extremely good, okay, and simply because it's been classified as an invasive species, okay, and that's also a fact, people are afraid. They think that, okay, it's trash fish. And I would never call this fish ugly. I mean, that fish looks like a fish.
It looks like dinner to you, I think.
I mean, absolutely. It does not have feet, wings, or four eyes, or it don't have any blue, red, or, color. I mean, I have seen ugly fish, believe me. But that, to me, looks like pretty much a salmon with maybe a displacement of the eyes going down to the below the mouth. But beside that, it's a very beautiful fish.
Yeah, and I've noticed you said, it sounds like you're describing very much a marketing problem here, and you have not referred to this fish as Asian carp. You have a different name for this.
Well, absolutely. As Sean said, a few years ago, he heard Silverfin. Well, I'm the one who came up with a Silverfin name, and I think that was the first thing that needed to be done. The first priority is to have a new name, and that is it's been done before for other variety of fish. The Pontagonus toothfish, for instance, was now is a Chilean sea bass. And since that got marketed as Chilean sea bass, I mean, look.
It's on the menu everywhere. You can...
10 years ago, when he started into the market, it was probably at $4 to $5 a pound. Now we're talking about $20 to $25 a pound. So, it does work. And I think in people's mind, if they refer that to another, that name, and even so they know and comprehend it is Asian carp, it is their mind, and that's a fact, so.
Yeah. All right, I'd like to talk a little bit more about preparation, too. Jim Garvey, for a minute, just coming back to you here. Some folks, including here with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, have said, creating a big multimillion-dollar fishery industry around Asian carp is dangerous. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that it's a complicated issue. There was a paper that my group came out with just a year ago or so that used some pretty sophisticated modeling to show that no matter how hard you fish these fish, particularly in the Illinois River, their reproductive rate is so incredibly high that they're pretty resilient to a lot of fishing. And in fact, to completely eradicate them, you've got to work really hard at it. And I think that the public needs to understand that they're going to probably be here to stay. There's really not much we're going to do about it, other than the fact that we can reduce their numbers to the point where it'll let the ecosystem rebound, probably let native fishes have a little breathing room, and keep them controlled to the point where maybe they won't have the propensity to move upstream as much towards Chicago. We think that the water coming down from Chicago, nothing to say bad about Chicago, but they don't like it. and the only reason why they're moving upstream is because they're looking for more breathing room, because they're so crowded downstream. So if we can get the fishing industry to really kick in the southern part of the Illinois River and have an impact on them, I'm not saying that we're going to have the managers come out and create sustainable fishing. I don't think we even need to worry about that because there's really never been a fishery that has been kept completely sustainable. But I think you're going to still get biomass out of these fish. And don't forget, it's not just the Illinois River. They're everywhere. They're in the Mississippi River. They're in the Ohio River. They're in the Missouri River. And they're spreading. They're also in lakes, reservoirs that people use for recreation. And their populations are extremely variable. They 1 year they'll have a bad year class. They don't produce a lot of babies. The next year there's millions of them out there. The point is that we've created fisheries associated with a lot of other fish. So this one seems like it's probably a pretty logical one to create as well.
And you don't share that concern. I mean, if I'm reading right into this reference to being creating this industry being dangerous, that you know companies and others may want to create an ongoing industry around it rather than trying to get rid of it and viewing it as an invasive species. They'll try to create an industry and, as you said, a sustainable industry.
Yeah.
That's not a concern for you at this point.
I don't think so. I think it's the sort of thing where the point is they're there, and it's a resource that, for whatever reason, we don't necessarily like, but we have to do something about it. And quite frankly, a lot of invasive species have some value to them, and so the issue is, how do we make use of that value rather than just saying, putting up our hands and saying, oh my gosh, there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
That's not helpful.
Okay. Jim, a question actually from Jim by email. He says, the bald eagles have returned in large numbers along the Illinois River north of Chillicothe. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. Does the eagle eat the Asian carp, and is that a reason for the return of that bird in that region? Do you know that?
It turns out that probably the reason the eagles have returned is because they were knocked down by various chemicals we used in the 60s and 70s that are very persistent in the environment and are finally starting to decline to the point where the bald eagle's reproductive rate is high enough that they can rebound. And so they're spreading throughout the U.S. In fact, it's a real success story for a variety of reasons. The issue is, yes, they eat fish, and oh yeah, they'll definitely eat Asian carp. We find in a lot of different bird species that eat fish, Asian carp are a large proportion of their diet now, as well as native fishes. So yeah, I mean, now can I link that to the increase in the bald eagle? No, not unless I had more data. But it's an interesting correlation.
Yeah, it is. Okay. We are talking with Jim Garvey, Vice Chancellor for Research, Professor in the Department of Zoology at Southern Illinois University, with Chef Felipe Parola down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, about Asian carp, both the problem and one of the really potential solutions here that is in place already, which is fishing the fish heavily and potentially even out of existence at some point. The number here is 800-222-9455. We heard that email there at will-talk@illinois.edu. And Chef Parola, another email here from Kiel. He says, a couple places here in this area in Champaign-Urbana have amazingly good catfish sandwiches. Farmed catfish, he says, is a somewhat dirty fish. He says it sounds like Asian carp could make even better sandwiches. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Anyone that wants to work with this fish, it cannot lose. The quality of his fish is superior, and Sean said it. To me, if it's well prepared, it tastes like crab meat. It's very clean. It's got a very beautiful color, and it's you can be so creative with this fish in making so many different dishes. And I try very hard to get the chefs on board, but to get this market going, and that's really the question mark here, is to be able to have the product that is suitable for the restaurant industry and the U.S. consumers.
Yeah, and how do you? You've mentioned bones and other things. How do you do
correct.
That?
Correct. Well, that's what I've been working, and we finalized our business and marketing plan a few months ago. Literally, it took pretty much 3.5 to 4 years to do this, but it takes innovative technology. Some food science involved, and it was not that easy again. Now, by removing the bones and creating this value-added product from this fish, so that fish patty, fish cake, fish boulette, there is so many different recipes that can be applied to it, and having this product cater to the American consumers, including the restaurant industry, the caterers, the cruise liners, and so on, under the Silver Fan brand name, absolutely. We did all this marketing testing. We achieved all that. We made presentation to the largest food distributor here who wants to be exclusive on the product, actually. So we have done our work here, and we're ready to go. And again, this fish hole that need to be understood, these fish hold domestically have very little value simply because it's so difficult to work, and it must be going to a processing mechanism that will take the fish, the bones out, and create this value-added product, and that's not easy.
Okay, so do you think, in terms of it being in, you know, restaurants, things like that, if it needs to go through this processing, I mean, do you ever see a day where this fish will be served up by chefs in a restaurant, or is it just it's too hard to do that with the bones?
Well, with the bones, that's your question?
Yeah.
No, that's not going
to
happen.
Okay, so it needs to be processed and then come through as...
Yeah, let's face it, we spoiled here. and look, I don't blame that, but it will be a very little activity, perhaps, that could work, but not enough to really make an impact. And I agree with Jim Garvey when he said that the fish are everywhere. That's for sure. Once again, you know, down in Louisiana, we have a big problem. Hello?
Yeah, you still there, Chef?
Oh, okay, yes, I am. And to the eradication on these fish, I agree with Jim again, that's not going to happen. But to control the population of the Asian carp, where it kind of limit the threat of the Asian carp toward native species or the entire ecosystem, matter of fact, that can be done. And to do that is to have a consistent, stable market. And I agree with Sean again. If we put these guys to work 7 days a week or 5 days a week, I don't want to be 7 days a week, but 5 days a week on a consistent basis with a base price that they are content with, then it's a go. There is no doubt. You're talking about a $25 billion to build the dams around the Great Lake. We are talking about $10 million, pretty close to it, a $10 million food processing plant, not a fish processing plant, a food processing plant that process fish. Now, I know that I heard and I know that by fact, there is activities, some fish market that are selling this fish. But again, these fish market are limited. They only can sell this fish whole. Food processing is like food science in a way. It's very difficult to achieve. You have to be extremely knowledgeable, and you have to have it's pretty expensive as well. So to make this work, you have to create the demand with a product, a suitable product that is sustainable, that will cover all the costs, including, and I say that as a priority, including paying these fishermen the right amount of money.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing, I've seen a number of types of dishes made out of the out of this fish tacos, sloppy joes, hot dogs.
That people are waiting for, literally.
Yeah.
And with the offal of the fish, the skin and the bones, I heard that there's a group that wants to extract omega-3. Well, taking the whole fish to extract omega-3, that's silly, because the processing to do that is expensive, very expensive, and it takes time. Yeah. The protein of the fish, the flesh of the fish, don't contain the oil. The oil is around the skin. We could definitely work with this group to ship all the skin and the head for them to extract the oil and make it a bigger profit, because you don't have to run this fish so long to extract the oil into these mechanisms that they use.
Yeah, it sounds like lots of options out there. Jim Garvey, I want to come back to you, and we're a little bit short on time, but Jim Garvey, knowing that this is all going on right now, this fish is going to be here to stay for a while, what could be done to improve the population of the native fish so they can better compete with these carp? Are there things that can be done to and around the river to improve that habitat?
Yeah, we've kind of lost our way in some ways as a society. Prior to the Asian carp invasion, Illinois River, and it still has this problem, is greatly altered, primarily due to sedimentation issues. We have a lot of soil loss. Even with the farmers doing a good job with the soil conservation, we still lose an awful lot of soil down the Illinois River, primarily due to agriculture and other industries. And that's causing loss of critical backwater areas that are important for fish and waterfowl, for example, and influence the entire productivity of the Illinois River, as well as other problems with other rivers that we have. And so if we don't pay attention to the watershed level scale issues that are affecting our fish and other populations of organisms that are out there, even if we take the Asian carp out of the equation, we're still going to have the same problems we had 20 years ago, and we've been dealing with. And so, again, we need to focus on both the carp as being an issue in terms of having negative competitive effects, but we also need to be focusing on sedimentation, water pollution, lack of various aspects of the river in terms of its shape and its size, that sort of thing. So that obviously is not in the conversation right now, and that needs to be put back into the conversation.
Yeah, so a much more holistic approach, it sounds like, to looking at the river system as a whole, not just trying to pick off one problem at a time as it happens to come up and wait for the next problem to arise.
It needs to be a restoration, sort of. The Illinois River is a jewel, and it has a long, long history of being a wonderful commercial fishery. It used to be full of freshwater mussels. They're not there anymore because they've been pretty much stifled out by the sedimentation. It's a different river than it was 150 years ago, and it'd be really nice to see it come back to that. It'd be great for Illinois and the region.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. And that, I should say, that question came in by email from Leopold. So, Leopold, thank you for that question. We are going to have to leave it there. Jim Garvey led a team from SIU that produced a 2012 report, Fishing Down the Bighead and Silver Carps. He joined us today by phone. Chef Felipe Parola owns Chef Parola Enterprises in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He also joined us from there by phone. I should say that Chef Parola is going to be in this area, in East Peoria, for the Flying Fish Festival and Bow Fishing Tournament. That's in July. So if you want to see him and take part in some of the things going on as they try to catch these and other fish, that again will be in on July 12th of this year. Thank you for joining us. Focus is produced by Lindsay Moon, Jason Croft, our technical director. Ryan Weber is our intern. I'm Scott Cameron in for Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.